Welcome to Discover Film. On today's podcast, we're talking to James Seward. James made a short film called The Past Inside the Present, and it's the kind of film you just have to see. It reminds you of great filmmakers like Terry Gilliam and Stanley Kubrick. You can just tell he had this crystal clear vision and that he accomplished that vision. We're about to talk to James, but if you want to get the most out of the conversation, you should go to discoverfilm.net and watch The Past Inside the Present. I'm telling you, it's going to blow your mind. You're going to want to know why I'm praising it so much. All right, let's talk to James. And even the guy that runs the projection booth, the tech guy at the theater, he told me at the second season of Film Invasion, he's like, remember that one, Past Inside the Present? I said, yeah. He's like, I show that to people at home.
That's awesome. That's great. Well, if only every film festival felt the way that you do.
Well, before we talk about The Past Inside the Present, let me ask you what got you to the point that you were able to make a film that combines live action and animation? Obviously seems like a labor of love, something that took you a long time to make.
Yeah, definitely. It took a really long time. It took like about 2.5 years. I mean, you know, I wasn't working entirely on the film that whole time, but yeah, for about 1.5 years for sure, that was like, I spent, you know, a good 70 hours a week on it. So, I think it was more like I thought, I mean, it was my thesis project, for my college, and it was more along the lines of I felt like this was my last chance to do something that was so kind of labor intensive and weird, and that it was the last chance that society really get in college gives you a free pass to do something basically self-absorbed with no real monetary value.
Right. You were doing it. Was it for undergrad or graduate film school?
It was for undergrad, but it took me, I didn't finish it for another 1.5 years, really. So I graduated in June of 2014, and I finished the film in January of 2016.
Yeah, so you stayed at it long after school.
Yeah, which is, you know, I mean, again, that's something that I think that a lot of people don't have that charity to work full time on a short film project for 1 year of their lives, you know.
Yeah, but also, they probably don't have an idea that's so worthy of it.
I don't know. I feel like what comes first, the chicken or the egg? I think most people probably don't consider doing things because it's outside of their means, you know?
Yeah, could be. Well, so tell me, what is your story before, or what led you into film school? And I assume, did you also study some animation too?
I don't really have any formal animation training.
Really?
The film is rotoscoped, which is in a way a much, I mean, real animators will tell you that it's kind of a cheat, because you're really just tracing. And then the 3D animation, that was kind of the foundation of the visual effects. There's a lot of online information, a lot of tutorials. I was more just like, you get a picture in your head and then kind of search for the tutorials that, allowed you to kind of figure it out.
Yeah, but you're downplaying it, but you had a vision, and then you worked out how to get it to screen.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole idea of the rotoscoping, it's funny, this is like the first time I've talked about this movie, and, you know, I haven't talked about it since I went to the festivals, which is mostly last year. So the story behind it is that I felt like I couldn't really... The original idea was... It was not meant to be rotoscoped, or at least that wasn't the original idea. The original idea was that it was going to be photorealistic, and all these things were really going to look as if they totally existed. And I just didn't have the, I knew I didn't have the visual effects skills to pull that off. So instead of trying to do something and doing a poor job of something, I thought I wanted to change the intention, and use a technique that I thought heightened the sense of time passing and the, you know, material degrading and all these things. So I felt like it thematically built on what was already there in the, I don't know, not narrative, but scenario, but also allowed it to be not apologizing for itself.
Right. But did you write the whole thing out as a screenplay, or did you storyboard it, or both?
I think when I first kind of started doing it, I tried to write something in 2009, but at that point, it had a lot of sort of vestigial parts that got lost as I found the core of what was important to me. And then by the time I was really thinking about doing it again, late 2012, I want to say, it was all visual. So I storyboarded it and we shot it in September of 2013, and I had storyboarded it over that summer.
Right. So you storyboarded and shot, and then you actually dealt with the animation, really the goals of your visual concepts.
Yeah. And that post-production process of like really being in it was like 18 months.
Right. But even going back a little further, I mean, I kind of want to delve into, you chose, you know, videotape. I assume you chose the idea of featuring videotape as the technology that's dominating these people and distorting their reality. I mean, you obviously live in the era of the smartphone and the touchscreen, but I assume it was a conscious choice to go back, you know, a couple generations of technology in what you feature in the film.
Definitely. I mean, I think that I think for one, the past is always aesthetic, you know, like, we watch old movies, and in a way you enjoy them like you enjoy period movies today. And you notice the way things look, because the way things are right now seems so, you're surrounded by it, it's unremarkable. And so you don't really, and you just kind of take for granted the aesthetic of whatever the current era is in. So I think that just in terms of a thing that I was visually interested in, I was interested in the way Betamax tapes looked. I was interested in the way VHS tapes looked. And then on a thematic level, I mean, the film is really about the degradation of memory and how time eats away at our identity. And digital technology, I mean, I guess this is maybe a simplification, but if you copy one file from a computer to another computer, if it's either there or it's not, either you corrupted it because one thing got wrong or whatever, or you have an exact perfect duplicate of the data. Whereas analog technology was more of an analog to memory, in the sense that by copying it, you have this sort of generational loss. And so there's the same feeling that by remembering something, you, in your mind, encode these very particular salient features of the thing and dismiss whatever is irrelevant or whatever feels superfluous or doesn't capture the emotion with which you are conjuring the past. So I think I was just interested in it aesthetically, but it also thematically fit the film better than digital technology, which I feel like is just either there or not there, and one or zero, you know.
Certainly that machinery is more visual than anything digital can be.
Maybe. I mean, again, I think if you look back at this era in 20 or 30 years, if we even can look back at it, because we still have a civilization, we will see people will be able to, it will see as the aesthetic of the present as something interesting and particular and something that has a voice, but it's kind of just what we're surrounded by now, so it's hard to really talk about it as something that editorializes off of anything. But the original idea was honestly just this image of the bisected heads with these sort of circuit boards on top of them. And I don't know if all the sort of whatever, if the themes of the film were even there. I mean, that was in high school, and I just sort of drew these heads, and I didn't really have a thing to do with them. So it did definitely come out of the iconography of sort of late 70s, 80s televisual technology.
Right, but that's I think that shows that you started with a visual.
Yeah, definitely. I started with a visual.
So even in high school, were you into film or shooting video and editing and doing things like that even in high school?
Yeah. I mean, I've been interested in making films since I was, 11 or 12.
Do you have any story about that? Do you have something that inspired you, or was it just always there?
Yeah, I do, actually. So, I mean, I think that when I was this is the story I always tell. Again, you sort of, these narratives get grandfathered in. But when I was like a really little kid, you just watch movies and you just think of them as like whatever stories that someone's telling, or it's just another way of conveying narrative. So I didn't really think much of them at all. And then my dad took me to watch this movie, Man with a Movie Camera, it's like a 1929 Soviet propaganda film, which is, I guess, the reductive way of describing it. But what it's really about is sort of fulfilling what the director and the editor believe are the innate desires of the camera for autonomous exploration and kind of, like that the camera has its desire to have this perceptual adventure throughout the world, and just letting it happen, you know. So like letting the camera roam free throughout this kind of early Soviet landscape and the what was at that time kind of latest machine technology. Vertov, the director, believed that, you know, we could emancipate our minds by kind of giving free rein to the fecund perceptual desires of the camera itself. So it wasn't that, you know, what bound the story in time, or what bound the kind of thing in time, was just what does the camera want to see, where does it want to go, what's it interested in. And to me, that opened up a whole different kind of movie, which was a movie that was a perceptual adventure, you know, that where it was about moving through space and moving through perception. And so I think from that time on, I really looked at movies as a way of fulfilling what I believe the camera is interested in seeing.
And you saw that, did you say, at around age 11 or 12?
I was 11, yeah.
11. So at age 11, you saw a Soviet art film that completely changed your perception of the medium.
Yeah, well, it was that, and this is, again, it's a kind of a story I always tell, but I also saw The Matrix around that same time, which was like a couple years old, but it was kind of in, it was like the first R-rated movie I saw. And in that film, you know, there's a kind of the famous part where the agent shoots Keanu Reeves and the camera just spins around. And again, that really captured my imagination because I was like, you can just literally stop the fucking story and the camera can just spin around the character because that's beautiful and interesting, you know, like all these things.
You can, you can literally change reality with the camera.
Yeah. And the camera, you know, and people were very, I think it's something that's gone out of fashion. We don't talk about it very often, but people were interested in that camera movement. That was, I mean, and that movement became iconic and was like kind of omnipresent in action movies for the few years after, which to the point it became a cliche because, and I think that it was a recognition that, that part of cinema is allowing the camera to go on a journey, a visually, intrinsically visually interesting journey through space and time. No, I was going to say, like, the thing that Vertov articulated so well was, look, of course, it's always people that are making these things, but when you feel inspired, it doesn't feel like it's you. It feels like these are the inherent desires of the material you're working with. You know, it's like, I think across all sorts of mediums, artists will describe this experience where it's like, well, the paint kind of guided me into it wanted a stroke there or whatever. The kind of chord progression in itself started kind of making demands on you. So I think it's no different with cinema. It's like you just start feeling like you put down some strokes, and then there's sort of things that are called for that you just have to listen for.
Yeah, yeah, and the art speaks for itself. The art is communicating through the artist.
Right. So I think that's the feeling. But I think Vertov had a way of articulating that that was, I don't know, to me feels true.
Yeah, no, so you had that experience as a young person, and that's... But did you stay focused on film right up through college, or did you?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I went to prep school, and there was a kind of video production class there, and I made a movie that, you know, again, it took me like 2 years to make this dumb little movie, but I was very serious about it. And then I went to Bard and was a film major there. And I try not to stop. It's hard to continue, but I've tried to continue to be a filmmaker. I do keep returning to animation and keep experimenting with it. I still don't think of myself as primarily an animator, but it is like, I just think you have to be a filmmaker. To me, at some point you feel like you have to engage with the material, which is a series of pictures. And so to engage with that is to engage with animation. You know, once you start considering film as a series of pictures, you're approaching the space of being an animator in a way.
Yeah, definitely. And it obviously grants you freedoms that most filmmakers can't even access. This thing, it just gives you a greater palette, really, to work with.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's very few things could be told in this way, and I've wondered since if I want to make another film that kind of has this same sort of, like, I don't know, patina or direct artifice kind of built into the surface of it. And I I'm not sure that I do, you know.
Have you shot some films since this?
I work, you know, sporadically as much as I can as a cinematographer and as a visual effects artist. And so I've shot some other people's movies. And I've shot basically two music videos since the completion, and one music video I finished in February, and the other one, which I shot like a year ago, I'm still working on the credits, is going to come out hopefully really soon. Hopefully.
And those are ones where you're working with the bands?
Yeah. I mean, in both cases, it's like the film, though it, you know, went to some festivals and this and that, hasn't quite led to the whatever success that, you know, I dreamed, which was that people would ask me to, like, I would get money to, like, make little music videos. So these were things that I was friends with the artist, and we said we want to make a video, and we tried to figure out a way to do it together.
Right. And your goal after making this film, do you have features in mind, or are you really more focused on short form things like video and shorts?
I do not have features, plural. I have a script that I've been working on. As maybe you can tell and probably from watching the movie, and I'm just not a word oriented person when it comes to movies. It's very much hard for me to construct things verbally. With the film in the first place, I had tried to write it, and then eventually when I really got serious about making it, I just storyboarded. But this is the film I'm writing now is just more of a it has completely visual parts, but it has pretty straightforward dramatic parts as well. When you see movies that are sort of clearly the director's more visual than they are. I mean, I just watched Valerian, and that's a movie where, and that guy is like so clearly, it's like, dude, you shouldn't be like, don't even make a movie with dialogue if this is what you want to do. You know what I mean? Like, I would rather see him make a movie that was like a documentary about crazy, weird, imaginary planets than like a movie with fucking Cara Delevingne and Dane DeHaan. Sure. I would just rather see him anyway. So my point is, I don't want to do it. It's so easy to be the person that is like the thing you would think if you watch the movie is like, oh, well, this is just this visual person. So I really am kind of protective of taking the time with the writing to feel like it really would work dramatically.
Yeah. Well, I would hope that people who see the past inside the present, I would hope their reaction is that they'd want to see more from you, because so few filmmakers, especially of your age, have such a clear vision. I mean, besides calling you a visual filmmaker, you actually have a vision.
Well, thank you, man. I don't know. I think that it is a crowded field and a lot of,
it's super crowded, and there's a lot of people who are lining themselves up to be the next person who could direct, you know, a romantic comedy, which is great, but somebody has to be the next, I don't want to necessarily say cutting edge, but, you know, somebody has to give us more than just knowing where to put the camera when two people are having a conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I think those people exist, you know. I mean, I didn't actually see it there, but I was at Slam Dance, and our film premiered at Slam Dance at the same time that Swiss Army Man that year. And I don't think that film is perfect exactly, but like, those guys are definitely visionaries. To me, there's no question. I think that there are a lot of people. I mean, you know, again, it's like you can say, like, I have my like bone that I would pick, but like, you know, like I feel like I love music videos. I'm a huge music video fan. And like, for instance, they've done just like consistently, obviously, specific and good work, you know, like even if the songs are not that awesome. I was rewatching, Daniel's video for Houdini, and it's like just as dense as it could possibly be. And I also wonder, is it like with our emphasis on features, like I think that those guys are probably doing their best work in the short form, but features are the only thing that gets seriously kind of considered in the marketplace or even really esteemed artistically. And I think it gives a short shift to a lot of people that want to make very detailed short films.
Yeah, definitely. That's a tough one. One of the greatest things about the festival circuit is you get to see shorts. You know,
right? And then
because going on YouTube or Vimeo and just, you know, you can't just search great short film. I mean, it's just it's really hard to access this stuff.
Right, and then the only things that can really break through are something that can be put together as part of an anthology
Anthologies are making a strong comeback, I guess, especially because of Black Mirror.
Right, but then those are almost, it's like, so the thematic ties have to be so kind of strong that, you know, I think that, I mean, I don't know, you know, ideally we would start to do, and I think that sometimes there's a thing that's done, but it's pretty rare where we start to do shorts ahead of features and like, but I don't know, you know, yeah, I think that even in the festivals, it's like, you know, I had somebody tell me, and I think it's true, I don't think they're being mean, I think that they're just being honest, is, you know, what gets you a career is coming to a festival with a feature you made yourself. The kind of short films are so crowded and they're so, anyway, it feels like it's really very hard to, you know, now that film is democratized to the extent it is, it's really hard to get any kind of recognition for a short film, which I don't know. I just think is a shame because it feels like a lot of times the quality of the filmmaking suffers in the feature because the resources are stretched much thinner for filmmakers that don't have them. It's like, I think that you really get very high quality features oftentimes from filmmakers without resources that could rival in production value and kind of specificity, something that's happening in the theater, but it's getting ignored in favor of features that I think just can't have the same level of care put into each part of them because of the kind of time schedule and pressure you're under to shoot a feature for very, very cheap.
Yeah, so the truly independent filmmaker can make just a far, far more accomplished short, but people are going to ignore that in favor of the person who stretched the dollars thin for 85 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that is probably the truth, you know? I think that, I don't know.
Yeah, well, it certainly is. Look, as somebody who's on a jury at a film festival, I can tell you that the number of just truly fantastic shorts, you know, there's not a million of them, but they're definitely better. When you come down to the features that get submitted to a film festival, a lot of them are just quite flawed. And yeah, it's both harder to maintain quality for 90 plus minutes, even if you have an unlimited budget, let alone
if you're working in those
constraints.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that also it's just a question of you know, there is the thing that I think a lot of people would say is a rejoinder to what I'm saying, which is also just, it's literally harder to make a compelling 90-minute thing than a compelling 15-minute thing or a compelling 10-minute thing because I think that a lot of really kind of talented filmmakers and I struggle with this all the time in the world of, you know, they have a really good kind of setup and concept. But when you get into the feature thing, you have to make something of that in the, I don't know if you want to call it the third act, but you have to pull those threads together in a way that is genuinely cathartic and satisfying. Whereas I think with this short film, it's basically, it can be a sort of a tease, you know, and it is allowed to be a sort of a tease of like, isn't this an interesting world? Like, aren't you interested in it? Okay, goodbye. Whereas with the feature, you kind of have to finish the sentence in a way that feels really dramatically satisfying and truthful. And that is genuinely probably much harder.
Oh, definitely.
I mentioned the Daniels because I feel like that they're people that have really managed to, you know, they have a certainly a very entertaining brand, but it doesn't feel and they're able to bring it consistently to a bunch of different genres of music, but it doesn't feel cheap. It feels like they've got a general enough thing that is that they can apply it to a lot of different genres of music, and yet it's recognizable and kind of a legitimate artist statement every time. But and I think there's a lot of people like that. It's just there's a lot of people that aren't.
I bet there are, and we're also in a. I am one of the people who really misses the era when there were music video channels and truly beautiful music videos actually did stand out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real, it's kind of the biggest, or it's probably something that makes me the saddest because that's really what I want to be doing. You know, I love music videos. I love, to me there's a particular kind of compressed synesthetic magic that comes from watching a narrative that was designed to fit a piece of music like a glove, but it just doesn't have. I don't know if it's how we're consuming music these days or whatever. It doesn't feel like it's as much of a career path as it used to be, or at least it isn't for me. No one's called me up.
Right. Well, that's tough. If only the coolest musicians around would see the past inside the present. I think maybe, just maybe. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'll just ask, have you seen that the Kanye video I have for Power? That he.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
a pretty
good
video. I can't
even
name the artist who made it. It's just an incredible music video.
Right. Well,
and Kanye's standing still, and I guess he just basically said, make something amazing. And this artist did. You know, he had a video.
Well, that came out. Didn't that come out around the same time as that? Because, you know, another person I think is interesting who just made a couple interesting movies is, and then has kind of disappeared a little bit because he had some movies didn't do so well, but is Tar Sem. And he made that movie, which, again, like Immortals, I'm sure is like not a good movie in a million different ways. But what he was doing with that film, or what he did with some of the kind of sky battles with the gods, was very similar to that Kanye video, where it was just very directly and unapologetically conjuring the experience of Renaissance painting with movement and photorealism. And I thought that movie was, you know, formally interesting for that reason. I don't know if you remember this, but it had all these kind of Caravaggio-like.
Actually, I have to confess that when Immortals came out, I didn't see it.
I don't know. I mean, this is just my opinion. I think that Tar Sem is like a more is like what Zack Snyder would like to be, maybe.
Right. Sure.
Like, but also, you know, I'm not trying to say Immortals is a good movie. It's like definitely not a good movie in a lot of ways, but it has some interesting parts. I feel like if people want to watch a Tar Sem movie, they should watch The Fall, which I think is actually a very, very good movie.
And from there, James just started making film recommendations. So all those recommendations are over in the DF4Q episode with James. Again, I got to urge you to watch The Past Inside the Present at discoverfilm.net. It's just one of those films that's going to blow you away. I just wish it becomes like his Eraserhead. You know, David Lynch made Eraserhead, and the people who saw it ended up making sure he had a career, and I really hope the same thing happens for James. Anything you need to know, you can find out at discoverfilm.net. Thanks for listening.